James Sharman joins us now, host and analyst for Soccer Central on Sportsnet. Gets, come on, Brady and Price. I mean, outside of when you go on with Dan Riccio, I see all these audio clips. You must be so tired of going on shows that only talk soccer once every 4 years, but this is always home for you. We have this is a footy place to be. It feels like comfortable shoes and a fireplace and a hot meal. You won't have to go on these shows 3 weeks from now. I promise.
I don't believe you. There'll be some ridiculous transfer or some scandal breaking and you'll drag me back on and I have to explain the game and apologize to everyone out there about all its imperfections. But you're right. Right now, let's celebrate it. So I appreciate the airtime, Greg.
Well, and next week I'm on vacation during a World Cup semifinal, so you can come on with Hugh and Elliot and answer questions about like whether they actually kick with both feet or not. You know?
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, yeah.
That seems a little simplistic. You know what?
The Canadian soccer market has come a long way, put it that way, a long way for the last 10 years or so. I get good interviews, good questions pretty much every time, and some bad ones.
Why can't they change on the fly like hockey? I'll give you a minute. Why aren't there boards?
I'll tell you why I'm grateful about this World Cup and what's happened so far is at least Messi and Ronaldo are out now, so I'm not asked about them because that was the narrative for the first, 2 weeks of the World Cup and the week and 2 weeks before the World Cup, every single interview, Messi, Ronaldo, that's now gone. They're both out.
That's
good. Focus on the games.
I heard a guy on a U.S. Show guarantee that Ronaldo would win the Golden Boot after Portugal's second match, and I'm like, good, good. For the rest of us. Good. You make that wager. We'll come to the World Cup in a sec. I watched a ton. So I'm at the game Sunday at BMO. I gave up Croatia-Denmark penalties just to be there. I did. That's me. And I watched almost all of last night on that godforsaken university campus pitch. But they're in some trouble now. There is, like, everything that went right last year is truly going wrong this year for this squad.
It really is, yeah. And, I mean, this is maybe the time that they should be panicking, you know. When I was asked this last time about a month ago, I said, no, relax. They'll turn it around throughout the summer at some point. They'll find their form. And it just hasn't really happened. The defense is, as you saw last night, very poor. Obviously, they're missing Drew Moore a lot. Up front, they've been missing Altidore. That's clearly obvious as well. They were playing so well, it seemed, in the early part of the season in the Champions League. They did so well, and that obviously derailed them with the injuries. But there comes a point in the season where you've got to say, well, it's now or never, because at this point, the playoffs are looking ominously difficult to get to at this point. You know, I don't see a change in form or the way they're playing right now. So it's incredible, the drop-off. The plan was for this team, this club, to contend perennially, and that was the goal. And they won last year, and they're fantastic. But it was supposed to be a continuation, and it just hasn't happened so far. So some questions need to be asked, for sure.
James, is it too easy to blame Toronto FC's run to the Champions League, that they kind of shot their bolt trying to win that, and as a result, they're paying the price now?
I think it's a valid point, honestly. I mean, obviously, at some point, you've got to start making excuses and say, well, you know, this is what you've been dealt with, and top teams will be playing Champions League games every year, get used to it, and build a squad that can deal with it. But this year, clearly, you know, the training camp was cut so short with big games as early as February. And the injuries to key players was really important. Add in that Giovinco is not the same Giovinco this year as it's been in previous years, although he scored last night. And I think he got some major concerns there. But I think it's a valid excuse this year. But, you know, they knew what they're getting into. And I think it's a great lesson to learn regarding priorities and perhaps squad depth.
I remember the England squad in 2014 that went to Brazil. They're in a tough group. Italy, Uruguay is in that group. And we didn't think they'd do much. And we were right. But I remember Roy Hodgson getting this massive contract extension. And I hated it at the time. Hated it. Could they have... And look, I'd be the first to say, though I feel validated by Hodgson and Euro 2016, I was skeptical Gareth Southgate had enough managing experience to be an impressive manager. But so they kind of went with the anti-popular choice after you know some scandal prior with Big Sam and then Roy Hodgson. So do you look and go, man, they could have accelerated this had they put Southgate in this spot a couple years earlier? Or do they simply have to wait out the careers of older players and wait out until the younger player, a lot of these younger players on this squad, including the emergence of John Stones, who was widely criticized when I was over in Europe in 16. A lot of people weren't sure he should even be included on that Euro squad. Did they have to wait out this age gap there?
Yeah, I think the timing's really good. You know, bear in mind that Southgate at that time was very much involved with the youth grade level in England and the younger players, and some of these players he was coaching at that grade knew about them. And, you know, as you said, some of those older players had to be, you know, pushed to the side, and it took Southgate to do that. He was the guy when he came in originally to say to Wayne Rooney, thanks, Wayne, you know, but the time has come for you to move on. So I think the timing was perfect. There's this new belief, this new breed of young player. And you're right, a manager that isn't that experienced at this level, he was in charge of Middlesbrough for a while there, a few years ago now, then got very much in the English FA setup. And when he was first hired, the concern was, oh, another FA man, you know, there's no originality to the thought of hiring him. But it turns out, given what the FA is doing with St. George's Park and what they're doing there with the young players, you do see a real pathway here, and he's been fantastic so far. He's instilled a real belief in that team and taken the pressure off. They're playing more freely. I mean, Greg, you've seen them play for a long time. They're playing freer now than I've ever seen them play, and I really think it comes down from that man, Gareth Southgate.
No matter what happens the rest of the way, do we have a new goalkeeping hero in Jordan Pickford? He did something that Joe Hart struggled to do. David James clearly struggled to do. And yes, even the lengthy international run of David Seaman struggled to do. You'd cringe at penalties. Had they won just off the crossbar, that would have been one thing. But the save he made is still, I mean, I've seen it 50 times just by accident on North American television in the last 24 to 36 hours.
It's an amazing save, wasn't it? You know, with that left hand sticking up the last second and a lot of strength in that wrist as well to push it away. Jordan Pickford's been very, very good. There were some question marks about him when he came in. But, you know, regarding shootouts and the mentality, you know, Pickford is a real young guy. He barely remembers, I imagine, the last shootout loss England suffered. And he wasn't there, you know, does not remember, I'm sure, that the ones in the 1990s, he was even born by then. So, you know, he hasn't got that hanging over him. And I think he enters games with a real confidence, a swagger. He's not a big goalkeeper. And Thibaut Courtois, the Belgian goalkeeper this week, was criticizing him before their match, saying he's too small to be a great goalkeeper. You know, and it really, I think it upset him because he responded saying, I may be small, but I'm really powerful, strong, and athletic. And he was. So, you know, he's been a good story so far. Hasn't done that much aside from the last game. The big save that resulted in the corner that Colombia scored on was a brilliant save, overshadowed sadly by the fact that Colombia scored from the corner. And then, of course, the heroics in the penalty shootout. So, you know, he's definitely, you know, for the present and the future. But there's some decent young keepers coming through the ranks there in England as well. Jack Butland. So I wouldn't say that he's guaranteed to be the number one for the next decade. He might well be. But right now, he's definitely the right man for the job.
Give us 10 seconds on each on who you're picking in the two games tomorrow and why.
Okay, so we've got Uruguay, France. That's going to be a really interesting one. I've got a suspicion Uruguay might pull it out. They're collective. They're a strong team. Defensively, we know that. They can score goals, even without Edinson Cavani. And France, you know, man, they could be brilliant tomorrow, or they could be just dreadful and implode. So I'm going to bank on the latter and go with Uruguay in that one. Brazil, Belgium, barn burner, fantastic match. I'll go for Brazil. Belgium, you know, they're running into some pretty good teams in these tournaments. They play well so far. Maybe the moment of the World Cup against Japan and that last second goal to put them through. But I think Brazil are the best team at this World Cup at the moment. They're finding their form. They're building momentum. And Neymar, despite his theatrics, has really found his top gear the last match. So we'll go Brazil, Uruguay in the semifinal.
The awesome James Sharman joining us on Brady and Price. We don't have time to ask you about the Philadelphia Union Atlanta United prediction, but if people see you around town, can they come up to you and you'll break that down for them? 40 seconds at a time.
I'll be more than happy to.
Great.
More than happy to.
That's a big one.